Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Just around the corner, Christmas. Shortly after that, though, January. And that brings us to the annual March for Life and the LCMS Life Conference that happens around the same time as the March for Life and the Life Conference every other year, I believe. And who's going to be speaking that? What are they going to be covering? We're going to talk about that here on Faith and Family today. Very pleased with the lineup of guests that will be speaking at the LCMS Life Conference in 2017, and privileged to have several of them as our guests today here on Faith and Family. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin and their fine work on our website, kfuo.org. You'll find the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Joining me by phone this morning, Dr. Donna Harrison, Executive Director of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Dr. Harrison, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thanks for asking me back, Andy.
Always a pleasure and a privilege to speak with you, and looking forward to having you at the LCMS Life Conference again this year. Dr. Harrison, why is the Life Conference a conference that you are involved in and have been involved in the past, and coming to, and the March for Life, all things that you've been involved in? Why do you accept the invitation to be a speaker at such an event?
It is such a joy for me to be among my Lutheran brothers and sisters, to actually help them to understand what are the issues that are involved here, and how even though the issues scientifically may be difficult or tricky, but the moral issues are something that everyone can understand. And I am just thrilled to be able to address this group.
As a physician, I'm sure you deal with that. Sometimes it's a tough challenge of you have to look at the science and the moral issues and figure out what does this mean, and what does it mean to be a Lutheran? What does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be human when addressing these issues? What are the tough issues that you and other physicians are looking at as the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists?
Well, as APLOG, as we say it, because it's a lot shorter, we deal with any of the life issues that involve the beginning of life and that would involve medical aspects. So we're involved with all of them. But the two that I'm going to be covering at the conference are looking at not only how is a human being formed, what was God's design in forming it, but also how do we now use assisted reproductive technology, and what are the issues behind assisted reproductive technology? Why does that involve a Christian worldview, and how do we deal with that? How do we answer these questions? And then the other topic I'm going to be covering is prenatal genetic testing. Again, a very difficult issue because it involves knowledge, but what do you do with that knowledge? When you know something ahead of time, is being empowered to act the same as an imperative to act? So I want to probably raise more questions than I answer, but I want to make it very clear what the drivers are behind, the IVF industry, and then just explore these topics with faithful brothers and sisters.
What are the questions? What are the issues on the table in the discussion when it comes to reproductive choices today?
You have a whole group of people who, for one reason or another, aren't becoming pregnant when they want to become pregnant. And some of that may be age, some of that may be disease. Back in the day, it used to be that you would investigate for underlying problems in the woman and the man and try to solve those problems. It's a lot easier today to simply say, oh, we can just bypass the whole natural part and just do in vitro fertilization. So what does that mean? And how is that in vitro fertilization done? How many embryos are fertilized? What happens to the ones that aren't implanted? Those are the kinds of things that I'll be covering.
What, and so that then raises some ethical questions that we need to wrestle with, we need to work through. When it comes to wrestling with something like this, do you have an approach, or do you have questions that a series of questions that you usually work through when you're trying to wrestle with the moral, ethical issues?
Yeah, the defining point is, when are we talking about the life of another human being? So my body, my choice goes as far as my body goes. But when there's another human being involved, then my choice affects that other human being. And so the things that I do, when they affect my brother, my neighbor, in a Lutheran term, what am I responsible for? So responsibility for, as a woman, as one who can carry and nurture very, very early human life, what kinds of the decisions that I make about my body will affect this neighbor who is very tiny and who I alone can nurture into independent existence. So we start with where does life start, and then what are the other responsibilities that we have? What does it mean to nurture and care for the gift of life that God's given us? Because as Lutherans, we see life as a gift. This isn't just something we snap our fingers and bring into existence. This is actually the image of God in flesh that I, as a woman, can carry. So thinking about those things helps to clarify what these issues are.
The other topic you'll be addressing is prenatal genetic testing. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And that's a huge topic, a very important one. Because in prenatal genetic testing, a couple, a woman, is given information about what kind of risk she has for having a child have a genetic problem. So we get into issues of, well, what does it mean to have a genetic problem? Frankly, in reality, all of us have genetic problems. None of us have a perfect genome. So at what point does that perfect genome, the drive for a perfect child, obscure the gift of the child that God's already given you? Imperfect though we may be, in one way or other. Some of us are visibly imperfect, some of us are internally imperfect, but we're all imperfect in one way or another. And when we have knowledge that of the imperfections of our child, what do we do with that knowledge? Does it help us prepare to give this child the best life possible, or do we take that action into our own hands and say, okay, I'm going to reject this one and wait for another? And that's the kind of difficulty that prenatal genetic testing gets into. Not only that, but there's a big misunderstanding about prenatal genetic testing and what it does and doesn't tell you, because there's a difference between a screening test and a diagnostic test. And then even with the diagnostic tests, diagnostic tests are not always perfect. So we make irrevocable decisions based on imperfect testing. And it's something for us to wrestle with.
Indeed, definitely something to continue to look more deeper at and to wrestle with, to struggle with all the questions that it presents. I appreciate what you mentioned earlier, that you'll probably create more questions or present more questions than you'll answer. What is it about the LCMS Life Conference? What are some things that you like about this conference and the March for Life, which is a part of it as well? By participating, being there present with the others, what are some of the highlights from years past at the LCMS Life Conference?
It has been wonderful, like I said, to be with brothers and sisters who are Lutheran, who are also pro-life, who are willing to take a public stand to defend the least of these. And it's just been wonderful to be there and to hear the speakers who are really good speakers. I always learn something at every conference. And so I've just greatly enjoyed being there, and will enjoy it even more speaking there.
So not only going as a presenter, but you enjoy hearing the other presentations and being a part and being a student, if you will, at this.
Exactly. And the LCMS conference has some outstanding speakers lined up. I can't wait to hear Dr. Delgado and to hear some of the other speakers. It's going to be great to just hear their presentation. Very encouraging.
Well, very good. Well, speaking of Dr. Delgado, Dr. George Delgado, he is our next guest, and looking forward to speaking with him as he's preparing to present at the conference as well. Dr. Donna Harrison, Executive Director of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, thank you for being my guest. Looking forward to the Life Conference in 2017.
Me too. See you soon.
Thank you. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll check in with one of the other presenters at the LCMS Life Conference, Dr. George Delgado. He's the Medical Director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare and the Medical Director of Abortion Pill Reversal. We'll learn more about that in just a moment here on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County invites you to join them Sunday, December 11th for the annual German Advent Christmas service. The preacher will be Dr. Robert Kolb of Concordia Seminary, the liturgist Pastor Dennis Kastens of Peace. This Sunday, December 11th, starting with pre-service music at 2:15 and the service at 2:30 at Peace Lutheran Church, 737 Berwicksview Road in South St. Louis County. The service will be rebroadcast Sunday, December 18th on Worldwide KFUO.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We're talking about the LCMS Life Conference, Life 360, coming up January 27th through the 29th in Washington, D.C. You can find out more on the website lcms.org/life. You can find more information looking for the Life Conference, Life 360. A number of great presenters speaking at this conference. And our next guest, Dr. George Delgado, is the Medical Director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare, the Medical Director of Abortion Pill Reversal, and the Associate Medical Director of the Elizabeth Hospice. Dr. Delgado, thank you for being my guest today on Faith and Family.
You're very welcome. Great to be here.
Dr. Delgado, tell me a little bit about your work with the as Medical Director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare and Medical Director of Abortion Pill Reversal, how all of these organizations that you're involved in, how they overlap, and what is your work with each of them?
Well, it's really three organizations, and so it's and they all work really hand in glove. First is Culture of Life Family Services, which is sort of the ministry arm that here in San Diego County, we have two locations, and we have outreach to women who are in crisis pregnancies, and of course that means women who are considering or are being pressured to have abortions. And so as part of that ministry, we're there to give them free ultrasounds if they need them, to provide medical care for them, and to give them a medical perspective on the truth of the humanity in the womb so that they can truly make informed choices. We also do high school and college outreach to promote chastity, because we know that the crisis pregnancy is sort of analogous to an intensive care unit situation where a person's had a heart attack and is on the brink of dying. Well, of course, we know that it's very important to give care to that person who's had a heart attack, but we also know that it's very important to try to work on lifestyle modifications years before that so that they stay healthy and their arteries never become diseased. So that's what our outreach is all about, and we also do a lot of speaking engagements and promoting the pro-life cause. I'm also available for bioethics consultations because I'm trained in bioethics, and many times people seek me out for that. As an outgrowth of that, then, we have Abortion Pill Reversal, which is its own organization, but a project of Culture of Life Family Services, and I'll come back to that in a second because I think we want to spend more time on that. And Culture of Life Family Healthcare, then, is the sister organization of Culture of Life Family Services, and that's the medical practice itself. And we exist really to be a Christian light to the world, a practice that is totally in accord with traditional Christian teachings. So we support the family, we support the sanctity of marriage, and We are there to provide really healthy messages and good counsel to people coming, whether they're women in crisis pregnancy or just regular families are coming for family health care. So we promote the value of life. We don't advocate or refer for euthanasia, abortion, sterilization. And we also are very careful to follow God's design for reproduction. And so we are only promoting the very effective modern methods of natural family planning as means to help people plan their families. And we also provide something called NAPRO technology services, which are ways to treat infertility and other issues with the reproductive systems that, again, that respect the God's design for human reproduction.
At the LCMS Life Conference, you'll be speaking, the session is titled, It May Not Be Too Late, Abortion Pill Reversal. Now, you and I had a chance to sit down and talk about this a little over a year ago, and I was just amazed at the work that you and others have done to bring about, another option for a woman who has started the process of using the abortion pill. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit more this morning and what you'll be presenting at the LCMS Life Conference.
Sure. We call it a second chance at choice because women who undergo abortion, whether it's a surgical abortion, the so-called traditional abortion, or the new medical abortion, they often have almost immediate regrets. And of course, with a surgical abortion, once the instrument enters the uterus, it's too late. Nothing can be done. But fortunately, God has given us this opportunity with abortion pill reversal. After taking the first drug, which is called mifepristone, which previously was known as RU-486, that there is a window of opportunity where we can treat that patient with progesterone to help block the effects of mifepristone and to save the baby's life. And so that's what we're promoting with the abortion pill reversal. And my talk at the conference will be to give people an understanding of this and increase our people's knowledge and awareness, and also to give them an update because right now we've had more than 200 births of babies who've been saved from mifepristone abortions, and we have about another 100 women who are currently pregnant with babies that they've saved after having a second chance at choice. So I'm going to go over some of the exciting news and data with that. The people, I think, are going to be very excited to hear so that they can know and tell their friends and tell all their pro-life advocates and tell people who they're counseling that if you take this mifepristone, this abortion pill, and you change your mind, there is hope.
There are misconceptions about the abortion pill, it sounds like. And there were things about it that I didn't realize, that it's actually a two-step process. There are two different pharmaceuticals that are used in this process, correct?
That's right. And the reason why is that originally the research was with mifepristone only. And mifepristone, the way it works is it blocks progesterone receptors. Progesterone is a very essential hormone for pregnancy. That's why it's called progesterone progestation. By blocking it, you starve the baby and the placenta of needed support, and the placenta separates from the uterus, and that leads to the baby dying. Now, once that happens, anywhere from 20 to 40% of the time, the uterus does not completely empty of the remains of the baby. So women are left with what's called an incomplete abortion. Now, incomplete abortion doesn't mean that the baby's still alive. It simply means that the uterine contents have not been emptied. And so the abortionists in their research, in order to solve this predicament, they added a second drug called misoprostol, also known as Cytotec. And Cytotec was initially developed to treat gastric ulcers. But it also is a strong promoter of uterine contractions. And it's used sometimes to induce labor. And sometimes it's used in women who've had deliveries and afterwards are bleeding quite a bit because by causing uterine contractions, it stops bleeding. Well, they use it in this case to augment the uterine contractions that are already being caused by the mifepristone so that there's a very high efficiency of emptying the uterus of all of the remains of the now dead embryo or fetus. And so that's why it's now a two-drug process. And but again, in between those two drugs, which is about 48 hours usually they wait to take the second one, we have that window of opportunity to give progesterone to block the first drug, which is mifepristone.
And how complex is this this process, the protocol that in basically reversing this process?
Well, really not that complex. What it takes is diligence and trying to get the progesterone started as soon as possible, because we feel that time is of the essence and getting the progesterone on board is important. What we have learned from the research and what we're right now, the data that we're analyzing, is it appears that the injected progesterone is the most effective means of saving the baby, and probably the high-dose oral progesterone is just about as effective. So what we've started to promote those two protocols, either high-dose oral progesterone or the injected progesterone, favoring those over the others. We may have a little bit more to explain about that at the conference as we finish analyzing the data, because we're not all the way done analyzing the data.
And you mentioned earlier that there's been success with this this protocol.
Yes, we've had great success. And with our high-dose oral protocol and with the injected protocol, our success rates are about 65 to 70%, which is quite good. And there have been criticisms of some who have misinterpreted the data that I mentioned earlier about the incomplete abortion rate. And they've said that, well, 40% of the time, the baby's going to be fine if nothing is done. But like I said before, that 20 to 40% is, if you do nothing, 20, 40% of the time, there'll still be contents in the uterus, but that doesn't mean the baby's alive. When we're, my colleague, Dr. Mary Davenport, is examining the old mifepristone-only studies that were done many years ago, and looking at those, and she's preparing a paper that she'll be submitting very soon. And what she's found is that if you do nothing after just taking the mifepristone, and you monitor if the embryo or the fetus is still alive, only 7 to 20% of the time will the embryo survive mifepristone only. So that means that we're taking this, the survival rate from 7 to 20% all the way up to 65 to 70% with our best protocols. So you can see that's a great advantage. And, of course, that's what women are interested in. They're interested in having and delivering babies that are alive. They don't really care if the abortion was complete or incomplete. They want to know that they'll have a live baby after 9 months.
What are other questions that or misconceptions that we might have about the abortion pill or this process of reversing it?
Well, there, of course, are always common concerns about birth defects. So women are very concerned about that, and the general public is too. And unfortunately, when some of these women who've taken mifepristone have called the abortion centers where they got the medication, they've been misled, and perhaps they've lied to them, and they've told them that, quote, your baby's sure to have birth defects if you don't do any, if you don't complete the abortion. And of course, this comment, we've heard it over and over again, that women have reported it to us spontaneously. So we're very concerned about that, because when you look at the data regarding mifepristone RU46, there's no data that supports that it causes birth defects. And in fact, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which is the main OBGYN body, they released a practice bulletin in March of 2014 that where they, in general, discussed medical abortion. And in that, they state that mifepristone is not associated with birth defects. So we know that the mifepristone, the drug, either kills the baby, if the baby survives because of the reversal, there are no chance of birth defects. And how about the progesterone, the medication we're giving him? Well, the progesterone we advocate is the natural bioidentical progesterone, the progesterone that's identical to what the body itself makes. So, of course, the body is not going to make something that's going to harm the baby, especially when it's the hormone that's necessary for pregnancy. And indeed, progesterone has been used safely in pregnancy for over 40 years. And the Food and Drug Administration has come out to say that progesterone is not related to birth defects. And the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, which is the main medical society for IVF doctors, they, of course, really have no interest at all in abortion pill reversal. They're just interested in vitro fertilization. Well, they use progesterone almost routinely during the first trimester in almost all IVF pregnancies, because they know that it can decrease the chance of miscarriage. And so they have a statement saying that they feel that progesterone use is safe. So we have a lot of confidence that both progesterone is safe in this process, and also confidence that mifepristone itself does not cause birth defects.
Dr. Delgado, this is this event coming up in January, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Life Conference. I believe this is the first time you'll be at the conference. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's my first time there, so I'm very excited to participate.
Very glad that you've accepted the invitation. We'll be our guest and speaking at this conference. Thank you so much for being my guest today on Faith and Family.
It's my pleasure. God bless you.
Dr. George Delgado, Medical Director of Culture of Life, Family Health Care, the Medical Director of Abortion Pill Reversal, and Associate Medical Director of the Elizabeth Hospice. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk with more presenters from the LCMS Life Conference and learn about some of the details, how to register, all that information you need to know so you can plan on attending in January. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
The latest abortion numbers are in from the government's Centers for Disease Control. It shows an encouraging drop in the number of deaths of babies by abortion. The rate of abortion is half of what they recorded in 1980. I want to caution you, the states of California, Maryland, and New Hampshire don't report abortion stats, so their numbers are low, especially since hundreds of thousands of abortions are likely being done in California. It's generally accepted there are just under 1 million abortions each year, so we still have our work cut out for us. But we can thank God for this life-saving trend. Our years of work and prayer are paying off in saved babies. Please continue to do your part to help the pro-life movement. Lives literally depend upon your partnership.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Live Thursday on Issues Etc., we'll review the movie Arrival with Pastor Ted Giese. We'll find Christ in Psalm 146 with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. And it's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Chris Roseborough. On Friday, we'll discuss the religious faith of Adolf Hitler with Dr. Richard Weikert.
Issues Etc. live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
Hi, this is Kelly Schumacher of Anustay Liturgical Arts. Are you looking for unique cards that share the true meaning of Christmas? Please visit anustayarts.com to see the new Light of Men card, Baby Jesus shining as a candle to the world, many more Christmas cards and gifts available. That's anustayarts.com, anustayarts.com.
Hi, this is Pastor Harrison. Let me tell you about something new and exciting. We call it Life Together, a monthly digital digest where I'll be sharing news and highlights from Synod publications and multimedia outlets. There'll be something for everyone. Each digest will be delivered to your inbox, showing how we live and work together to proclaim the gospel and bear Christ's mercy to one another in our congregations, communities, and the world. Please be sure to subscribe today. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are looking at the LCMS Life Conference, Life 360, taking place in January, January 27th through the 29th in Washington, D.C. In studio with me today, some familiar voices, the Reverend Jonathan Fisk, Pastor Fisk, host of his time here on Worldwide KFUO and Cross Defense, Concord Matters. Pastor Fisk, welcome.
Hey, yeah.
Glad to have you in studio here on Faith and Family again.
Yes.
And a presenter at the LCMS Life Conference.
Yeah, feeling kind of privileged. You know, you got a lot of people coming that are above my weight class, I think, in terms of notoriety. But yeah.
Also in studio, the Reverend Bardet, Executive Director of the LCMS Office of National Mission. And kind of one of the guys behind the scenes on all this stuff, getting ready for the LCMS Life Conference.
Yeah, busy coordinating all the details.
You got a whole team, a lot of people in the Office of National Mission, and I know that a lot of people who really care about this conference and seeing it happen.
Yeah, it's a collaboration of lots of folks in O&M and Life and Health Ministry, and a lot of folks in communication this year stepping up because we're going to do some things that are special at the march. So it'll be a great year to be in D.C.
And hopefully some better weather this year.
Yeah, we've had some great years and we've had some pretty miserable years, but it's always a lot of fun no matter how cold and frigid it is.
Pastor Fisk, will this be your first time in D.C. in January for this event?
No, I was at the March for Life, I want to say it's 3 or 4 years ago now. I was a side speaker at the LCMS conference then, but I got to go through the march itself and experience. It was one of the bad years, I guess you'd say. It was cold. It was cold, moving half a foot, a minute almost in this huge crowd. But wow, really, I don't want to say life-changing, like he's thrown around too easily, but really a life-changing event to see the number of people in this country who agree with us on this matter.
What will you be presenting on at the LCMS Life Conference?
I'm going to be talking about something that, if you want to know more about it, one of the best places to find it, if you're not going to be able to make it, is to Google Demographic Bomb or Demographic Winter. It's a series of videos that were produced a couple years ago about what the culture of death has set up our global world to face in the next 50 to 75 years in terms of depopulation. You still hear this mythology that never was proven, even when it was originally being spouted, about overpopulation and the world running out of space for people. It's never been a scientific fact, but it's one of those things somebody said and then just gets repeated and repeated until everyone assumes it's common knowledge. We're actually completely inverted from that and facing a downward slope that as a species, as the human race, we may not be able to pull ourselves out of very easily. That doesn't mean that we're all going to become extinct, but it does mean that a global economy that's gotten used to running with a certain number of truck drivers, a certain number of harvesters, a certain number of doctors, we're not going to necessarily have that coming up to replace what's going away. And if you can imagine taking a triangle and turning it upside down, that's what our population will look like generationally, where you have a small number on the bottom trying to maintain the economy of life for a large number on top. So we're going to talk about how that happened, where it came from, the science of that, trying to prove it, so it's not just me asserting that it's true, and then also demonstrating how this is not really a matter of faith. This is what we might call natural law. When God says don't do things, he usually has a reason for it, and when you break it, it has consequences. And one of the consequences of rejecting procreation as a good thing, which is really what this is about, is that you no longer have a human species flourishing. And it's not just Christians that are talking about this. You have TED Talks going on about what are we going to do with the global economy in 2050 and what a threat this is.
Okay, two phrases that you shared in that I'd like to unpack a little bit. You mentioned a culture of death and an economy of life. How would you describe a culture of death? What do you mean by that?
I mean, I think that's just a pro-life term that gets thrown around. I guess I've picked up, but what I mean by it when I say it is that we as a Western people do not believe that human beings have inherent value, that a baby is not good just because it's a baby. A person is not good just because it's a person or worth having around. And the reason why we do aggressively chase after things like contraception and then, of course, abortion is we don't believe that anymore. We believe rather the opposite, that humans get in the way. And so you have things like euthanasia as well are connected to this, that the human life is not valuable just because you're human, but there's a certain level of quality or understanding or what is it? When the heartbeat beats, then you're really valuable. We've rejected that. And so that's what a culture of death is. Economy of life, if I said that, that's a really cool term. I'm not sure what I meant when I said that, but the idea that, again...
You're creating new vocabulary
here. Right. It kind of makes sense, though, that God built the world. He ordered the world to work in a certain way, and part of that way is family. Fourth commandment, sixth commandment, both about not just family as in the nuclear family, but that the community, the village that grows out of, the tribe even that grows out of two people with other people who they've come from all being connected to and focused on each other. And part of that growth and community is the provision of the future. And so an economy of life, I guess, would be a mindset, a group of people, a civilization that sees, as Whitney Houston sang, but nobody believes, the children are the future, right? Teach them well and let them lead the way. I had to memorize that in grade school. But it's true, for Pete's sake. It's actually true, but I'm not sure we believe it.
The future, but they are also the present.
Yeah.
They're here. They're learning.
Yeah.
They have vocations now, too.
Well, some of them, a third of our generation's not, right? A third of our generation has been murdered in the womb.
Sadly.
Yeah. I mean, that's what this march is about, is recognizing what Hitler's the whipping boy of anybody in progressive social justice warrior land. You know, you're Nazi, you're Hitler, you did bad things. He didn't kill anywhere near, I guess half is a joke, anywhere near the number of people we've killed in the United States in the last 50 years. It is an atrocity, a Holocaust beyond expression. What the history books will say about us if they ever get their heads out of the current zeitgeist, the current way of thinking, is that we are one of the darkest, most wicked people to ever live. And to recognize that, to walk with other people who believe in that, to do what is our right as American citizens, which is to shout at Congress and say, listen, this is wrong. It's something that's not just going to give you a good experience. It will. It'll blow your mind. But it's something that's just ultimately worth doing.
Because we are here because we have turned in on ourselves. We're living in that. I mean, this old Adam is just very clear in our culture that that's what we live by so much so in our society today.
Right.
Living that old Adam.
Right. Well, you hear that in the language, you know, we're not ready for children, as if family is about me. Right?
You're never ready for children.
No, of course you're not. Nobody is, right? But it's the idea that it's about me, that I got married for my pleasure, that I'm going to have kids because they're like a step up from dogs, right? They're just a little better kind of pet. All of that is this culture of death that just doesn't value humanity as a gift to creation that God put here to serve creation, right? Not to destroy it, but to serve it. And of course, sin gets in the way of all this. But our sin, our abuse, does not destroy the use that God designed.
Pastor Fisk, thanks so much for being my guest today, and glad that you're going to be at the LCMS Life Conference speaking there, and a number of other speakers as well. We'll talk with Bart more about that here in just a moment. Thanks so much for being my guest on Faith and Family today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll let you get back to work.
Yeah.
Now, Bart, we've got a nice lineup of speakers. Glad that that you have one of our KFUO own here, our new Pastor Fisk. But you know, having the chance with people from so many different kinds of backgrounds, medical professionals, people looking like ethicists in a sense, are, you know, who are looking at these from an ethical perspective. All of them are actually, but just a nice variety of speakers for this conference.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful. It always is. It's a unique time for people in church to come and march. And we should talk about that because I think that's a special event. And as Jonathan said, it's pretty life-changing for people, especially he talked about looking over the mass of people, but it's the age of the people. They are extremely young. It is not a bunch of old gray-haired people like we talk about in our pews.
They're there too.
They're there too, but not in mass. I mean, they carry the signs, you know, we are the pro-life generation, and that's not really our generation. We're talking the people that are younger than you and I, the sub kind of 40-year-olds. So we should talk about that too. But the conference lineup, yeah, we're getting old. I know you don't want to talk about it, but you're getting old. You're getting old. We all are. But the lineup is great. And we took this kind of theme of Life 360, and we weren't able to completely develop it. But again, that part of the work in the Office of National Mission and Life and Health Ministry in particular is that the LCMS does not want to be seen as just anti-abortion.
That we're about life.
Pro-life includes an awful lot of other things that are pretty hot topics today, like all of those end-of-life issues, and there will be talk about that. There's going to be talk about sort of how in the church we care for post-abortive women, because they're out there by the millions, and they're in our congregations, and they're carrying a great burden of guilt and shame that needs to be given over to the gospel and to Christ. So we're going to try to look a bit more holistically at life, and this will be the first piece of that at the conference, and I think we'll see more of that in the coming years, where we try to talk on things like caring for children after they're born, foster care and adoption, and what about immigration and refugees, and what about end-of-life issues and aging and older adults and
disabilities.
Disabilities, exactly. I mean, all of these pieces that are a part of a true economy of life that is not just anti-abortion. We certainly are that. But when we talk about being pro-life, it's much more holistic than just the abortion issue, as critical and important as that is. Specifically, as Jonathan said, this whole zeitgeist in the way that we talk. I mean, we're pro-life. They're pro-choice. This is about women's rights. I mean, he talks about the horrible Holocaust. They would talk about the glorious freedom of women to make choices over their own bodies. So we have culturally reframed even the vocabulary and the words that have been carefully chosen to really not call things what they are, to placate our guilty conscience, to allow the slaughtering of millions and millions to continue to occur on our taxpayer dime even today.
And not just, as you pointed out, not just with abortion, but we've also changed the terms that we use when it comes to end-of-life issues as well.
Absolutely.
We've moved from euthanasia to death with dignity. We've moved from physician-assisted suicide to death with dignity and similar phrases so that we...
And it's about our choices. It's about me controlling the end. And we had that with some pretty high-profile cases just a couple of years ago that this is, I'm stricken with this disease and I'm going to die, but I'll die in my own way, in my own time, at my own hand, by my own choosing, and that I can control this life when it begins or when it ends, whether it's put to death in the womb or whether I take my own life so that I don't endure suffering that I think is, you know, beyond my handling. So, yeah, it's that whole cultural shift in how we talk and how we view things is profoundly impacted people inside and outside the church.
That way of thinking, that way of speaking takes, it sounds very familiar, right back to Genesis, right back to the garden.
Absolutely.
Who, you know, it's all about me, what I think is best, what I want, is this mentality that we have, that we've just embraced, and we've even... as Christians can fall into through that slippery slope.
Sure. And did God really say, I mean, really? Mm-hmm. If really it's life, then be sure. I mean, those temptations and voices of the evil one, you know, it's our sinful nature, but it's also, you know, the world and the devil.
We live in a society where we have started making decisions about whether or not life is, you know, one's life is valuable and worthy of living by making decisions of whether or not they can have resources to support their living.
Well, absolutely. You're touching on, I mean, you mentioned the disability piece. That's a huge whole other realm. And this has driven a lot of the abortion industry in the last 15 years. You know, I remember being in the parish and women coming to me saying, you know, I'm going to have my fifth baby and we're over 40 and, you know, the doctor wants to do some tests. But I'm not sure if we should do the test. So what's the purpose of the test? Well, they can tell us now if the baby has Down syndrome or disabilities and then would, you know, could give us options to terminate the pregnancy. So, I mean, all of that, what is the value, the inherent value, as Jonathan spoke about? We've now sort of, we don't like to talk about Hitler and an Aryan race and choosing and deeming who is worthy and good enough to live. And yet these are the very things that we're doing in all of these aspects. We are deeming a value apart from the image of God and who they've been created to be to intellectual capacity or physical development or whatever it is. Well, or just because it's not convenient for me now and I'll use it like birth control.
And as Dr. Harrison pointed out just a little bit ago, that we are making decisions and taking action, irrevocable decisions and actions, based on tests that are fallible, that aren't always accurate.
Right. 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 We act as if those things are sort of absolute and they know everything and, you know, your baby's going to have this or this is going to be wrong. And then they choose life and it's not. Or they choose life and it isn't all right, but it's beautiful and glorious in its own way. And talk to parents who have children with Down syndrome or disabilities, and these are wonderful gifts from God. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy life. It's sometimes challenging and difficult for parents, but it's a cross that they gladly bear, and those children are full of vibrancy in life. So faith like a little child.
Indeed, and thanks be to God for those parents who choose life for that child, knowing that there will be challenges ahead. Every parent faces challenges, no matter what the health of their child may be.
Right.
They face challenges, but thanks be to God for those parents who do make that choice to choose life for that child and to support them, sustain them, and most importantly, to bring them to receive God's good gifts in word and sacrament.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good segue into Eyes of Life. And this has been the other whole part of the conference and really of the march. And so if you've gone to the Eyes of Life website, which Communications has developed to support Life Ministry throughout the Synod, it's a wonderful kind of campaign to lift up all of life holistically. And so Aaron Bodie has written a beautiful song. Mm-hmm. But there are stories there that talk about the eyes of life and people in different places. So stories about someone who's lived a very, very long time in the nursing home, and the mother who chose to have her child against what she thought were insurmountable odds, or the parents who gave birth to the child with Down syndrome and is raising that child, and the family who adopted the group of girls from the Philippines that were older that needed a home. And so all these aspects of life are there in the Eyes of Life if you go to that website. And that's going to be huge at the march, because we're going to carry these huge banners with eyes, with the hashtag Eyes of Life, driving people to the website so that we're hoping, really, through National Right to Life and Catholic Council of Bishops and the Evangelicals for Life, we really hope, and we're hearing that they love this resource, the Eyes of Life. And people can go on there and share their own stories, and we're adding more pictures and adding more stories. So people are telling their own stories. The post-abortive woman who's on there that's Lutheran, who shares her story very intimately about what that was like to struggle and to really feel forgiveness for something that she thought for so long was unforgivable. So we will be there at the march, all the LCMS folks. It's great because we gather early that morning and we actually celebrate the Lord's Supper. There's a divine service, and we'll have Emmanuel in Alexandria, and Pastor Esgit, who's now a vice president of Synod, will be there to be the celebrant and preach for us that day. And it's a wonderful way to start the morning. And then, of course, flood down onto the metro with a million other people all trying to get to the mall. And we have some specific directions. You should go to the website. We have all the details there about where the Lutherans are going to gather. And we'll have all of our signs. And we'll have people there kind of leading the way. And we have placards, and we'll have the big Eyes of Life banners. And we sing and we pray while we march. And if you've never been there, the first time I went, I expected this extremely sort of solemn event where people sort of quietly meditate and walk, and it's
and then you showed up.
Yeah, but it is not just me. I mean, you know, you walk down the road and you have the group of Roman Catholic sisters who are sort of quietly praying the rosary, and then you've got the group of Humanists for Life that got a band and they're singing and jumping around, and I mean, it is kind of quite the parade, and people come to watch and step out of the Senate building, you know, as you're coming up toward the Supreme Court there. So it's quite ruckus. So the Lutherans tend to be there, and we like to sing hymns and pray along the way. And it is quite invigorating. And I, again, mentioned that you have so many of the younger kids there. And I think for them, and this is, we have travel grants for Lutheran high schools, the colleges, a lot of them are coming. We want the younger kids of the LCMS to be there. We will try to help facilitate you getting a group there, because they are the pro-life generation. They see these as fundamental issues of justice and equity, that these individuals deserve life just as they have life and others. But I think it's very empowering for them, because they can be lost in their school with a bunch of people who don't think like they are. So to go to that march and to see that magnitude of people speaking openly about life and embracing life and telling them that it's okay, someone needs to speak for these that have no voice. And you can do that. And you can do that without screaming and shouting and getting angry. You can very lovingly share the truth of who these people are and how they've been fearfully and wonderfully made and how God desires them to be in this world and to be in the church and serving their neighbor and all of the wonderful things. So I think it's a great moment for those kids to be at the march. And then, since we started the conference, to then come back for, you know, a day and a half to listen to speakers, to have those breakout sectionals. We do a lot of worship there, which are around the themes, and a lot of great preaching about life and those those aspects and issues, but then a lot of time just to fellowship and to be with youth and college kids and adults and older folks from the LCMS who are there, really just to share their stories and support each other around creating this culture of life and rejoicing in the gifts that God gives us and how we share that winsomely in the world. And I think that that's one of the most uplifting things of being able to come to the conference after that. It gives you a little bit of time to process that and really kind of think about and learn things. Like you've had the doctors on earlier that will be at the conference. I mean, they've got medical stuff to share. There are medical truths today that we didn't necessarily know 10, 20, certainly not 44 years ago at the time of Roe v. Wade. The ultrasound has completely changed the whole paradigm. We have unbelievable work happening in RSOs and, you know, that are sitting outside Planned Parenthood and just offering free ultrasounds. And when people see their baby, that's a game changer. So, I mean, the medical people who will be there, but people like Fisk that will talk about the culture and, you know, what's happening with depopulation of the world and what does this actually mean for us globally. It's great for high school kids, college kids, adults to really get together and process some of those things and begin a conversation that we hope will continue in their congregations, in their schools, in their communities, and then nationally for us.
What I like about the two of the physicians that you have lined up for this conference, Dr. Delgado and Dr. Harrison, who we just spoke with, they both recognize their audience, that they're speaking to lay people.
Right.
Not physicians. And able to present all of this information, the science, the ethical issues, in a way that... Well, in a way that I could understand. So if I can understand it, then then anybody can. And I think just to have them present is outstanding. A great lineup. Pastor Esket, the Reverend Dr. Matthew Harrison, our president there.
Absolutely.
Molly Ziegler Hemingway.
Yeah, speaking. She'll talk about media and what's going on there. And if you haven't seen Molly, she's everywhere these days. Just turn on any talk show and you see Molly. John Pless, who did the Catechism of Life, is going to talk on end-of-life issues. He's fabulous on sort of these core issues and particularly now end-of-life issues. So a lot of great people going to be there.
Jonathan Lang, Reverend Jonathan Lang, and Philip Magnus. I assume he's presenting music.
He'll be the cantor for all the worship services, so they will be great.
And Reverend Jonathan Ruiz, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah, I believe Ruiz? That's, I Ruiz? Think you're right. He's at Concordia Irvine.
And he'll be speaking, the Reverend Michael Salamink, director of Lutherans for Life. You hear him a lot here on Worldwide KFUO.
Right. He's on the poster board of Woman. Mm-hmm. Reese is on the sort of families who have children with disabilities and what that looks like. So again, we've tried to bring in some of these other, beyond just abortion issue topics, to kind of be a bit more holistic, a bit more 360.
Carol Tobias, president of the National Right to Life Committee.
Who's LCMS. This is great. Mm-hmm. So she gives us access there. And she certainly is able to see the broader landscape of what's happening just sort of nationally in right to life issues. And let's be honest. I mean, we are at an interesting crossroad. I mean, we have a president-elect who, despite what some of us thought, has said some pretty amazing things about life, at least in the realm of Supreme Court justices. So the idea that we could have a conversation that could lead toward change, actual legal change, actual overthrowing of Roe v. Wade, even if that meant going back to a state by state dealing with the issue, I don't think with the younger generation, I don't think this is as far flung an idea as most of us thought, it being completely improbable 15, 20 years ago. This is a real conversation, even in the political realm. And that means our lay men and women are going to have to be sort of attuned to and willing to work in that public square, to work in the political realm, to actually see those kind of changes happening for the good of all mankind.
To be informed, be a part of the conversation, LCMS Life Conference, January 27th through the 29th. Check out lcms.org/life, and you can find all the information about Life Ministry, including the Life Conference. The Reverend Bart Day, Executive Director, Office of National Mission for the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Thank you for being my guest.
Thanks for having me, Andy. It's always great. We'll see everybody in D.C.
In D.C., March for Life and the Life Conference. Thy Strong Word up next.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.